So, welcome to the PSPA podcast. I'm Rebecca Packwood, the Chief Executive at PSPA, and I'm welcoming you to our Montage podcast. We launched these podcasts in June 2021 with the very kind support of Pavers, who gave us a grant to produce them. And originally, our podcasts were focused at carers. During 2022, we did a review of that with a focus group talking to some of you about what you were most interested in. And in 2023, we relaunched the podcasts, appealing to everybody affected by PSP and CBD, particularly those living with the conditions, so that their voice could be heard, and to try and answer some of the questions that people have, from things like how it's difficult to diagnose PSP and CBD or what the current research is. So we thought we'd have a review of those podcasts in this montage that we've put together, and I hope you enjoy listening to that and looking forward to what's to come next year. We've had over 20 podcasts since we launched them in June 2021, so quite a variety to listen to, and I hope you enjoy listening to them now.
Welcome to PSPA's brand new podcast for people caring for loved ones living with PSP and CBD. My name is Liz Sturgis. I'm one of PSPA's helpline care navigators, and I will be chatting with various carers, professionals, and PSPA staff members once a month about topics that matter to you. This podcast is brought to you thanks to the kind support of Pavers Foundation in memory of Mary Yule, who passed away in the past year. In this first episode of our Carers podcast, we're talking to Beth Morgan Henderson, who's Head of Communications and the Charitable Foundation at Pavers. Beth is going to share with us her PSP experience and how support of our podcast came about. Welcome, Beth.
Thank you.
So what symptoms did your aunt show, and how was her diagnosis made?
So initially it started in 2014, and it started with dizziness and balance problems, and she had frequent falls and causing herself a great deal of injury. During the time, she also suffered with high blood pressure and anxiety and panic attacks, which she was informed exaggerates her problems. But despite medication, the dizziness and falls continued. And after several visits to A&E, she was eventually referred to the falls team, who, along with the GP, made a diagnosis of benign paroxysmal positional vertigo, BPPV. They recommended several aids and an adaptation for her to obtain, such as walking frames and grab rails. Early 2018, she was finally diagnosed with having PSP, which was devastating for her and her family, knowing that she has such an incurable disease.
In our second Carers podcast, we will be talking about caring for a loved one, how your caring role can change, what has gone well and what has been difficult during the pandemic, and what support has been available. Julia Tickridge joins me for the podcast today to talk about her experience of caring for her husband, Laurie, during the pandemic. Welcome, Julia, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Liz. Actually, as early as about 10 years ago, I started to notice a few things, perhaps, in his personality, but didn't really think anything about it. But really, 2015 was when I really started to notice the first signs of some cognitive impairment and some clumsiness, actually. Yeah. But the thing that was most noticeable, strange, was his handwriting. got very, very small. He'd always had lovely handwriting, really clear, very distinctive. And now it was suddenly small and spidery. His speech was becoming unintelligible, was very hesitant. He was stumbling, stuttering and slurred. I mean, it wasn't really him at all. I noticed his movements were starting to get uncoordinated. When we'd be walking about, his arms and legs just didn't seem to go together, as it were. Yeah. He was losing balance. He was starting to get overwhelmed generally by life. And just the simple everyday tasks, just the sort of executive function, if you like, I'd notice he wouldn't be able to follow through on tasks. He'd sort of stop and start, and it just seemed to be a bit directionless, really. Laurie went to the GP. He was very brave. He took it upon himself to take himself along. And he was referred, having had a memory test in the GP surgery, he was referred to the local memory clinic. We actually had to wait a long time for that appointment, to be honest, about 6 months, but we did see a psychiatrist.
Yes.
I actually need to say here that it's so important with the diagnosis, and it's possibly just luck, unfortunately, these days, who you get referred to. And I do feel that had Laurie been referred initially to a neurologist, we might have got to a diagnosis a bit quicker than we did.
Today we're talking about house adaptations. Occupational therapist Julie Cummins joins us today to help us navigate the starting points and key recommendations using her experience in healthcare and also of assisting her dad who had PSP. Hi Julie, and thank you for joining us.
My dad was diagnosed back in, I think it was 2008. And we had quite a lengthy process, really. We had a lot of misdiagnoses prior to that, which I think seems to be quite a common thing with PSP and CBD as well, because it often gets mistaken, I think, for Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. And we kind of got all those diagnoses, but nothing really sat right with us. And Dad's presentation didn't really sit right with any of them. So we were very, very lucky.
So I suppose as PSP and CBD progress, it can be common for people to need to think about adapting their home. You've mentioned that you're working in that area. And they do it to make it easier to complete everyday tasks and to manage their changing needs. What would you say would be a good starting point for anyone approaching this stage of thinking about adaptations?
Yeah, I think if you're thinking about them, you need to act on them pretty quickly. It can be something that's hard to navigate on your own. So I would say if you were involved sometimes people are involved with a neuro team, or maybe just in general with their GP, or they have like a community matron maybe allocated to them. But what I would say is talk to those people and get yourself referred over to physio and OT, mainly OT.
Of course. So. And today we'll be talking about the PSPA helpline and how the helpline team can support you and your family. Jules Brown, the PSPA helpline manager, is here today with us to share some insight into the helpline support. Welcome, Jules.
Hi, Liz.
Tell us a little bit about yourself to start with and what the helpline at PSPA does.
Okay, so I'm the helpline manager. I wear two hats. I'm a helpline manager / helpline care navigator. I've worked for PSPA now for just over 8 years. And just a little bit of history. When I first started, it was about 18 months to 2 years in from the introduction of the helpline for PSPA. And there were two of us. There are now five. So we have grown fairly rapidly and probably in time we'll grow even further, hopefully, with the amount of calls that we start to seem to be getting. So the helpline at PSPA, it's multifaceted. We're not a call centre. although we do take calls, and I suppose that's our bread and butter, taking calls, talking to people about PSP, talking to people about caring issues, talking to people about anything that they want to talk about, really, that's influencing the lives that they're living on with PSP or CBD. We also respond to emails. We get quite a lot of emails in and out. I think following on from the pandemic, for a lot of people, that's a choice that they're making because they've got more accustomed to technology.
We proactively
contact people as well living with PSP and CBD. So when people come to us initially, we'll have a chat, a conversation, find out about them. And if they want that, we'll continue to contact them periodically through the year, maybe every 3 or 6 months, most probably depending on what they want from us, just to say hello, remind them we're here and see if there's any ongoing work we can do for them. That ongoing work could be anything from supporting them with a referral to an allied healthcare professional, such as an occupational therapist or a physiotherapist or a speech and language therapist. We're sometimes a conduit between themselves and the Parkinson's nurse specialist. We often can get hold of them maybe when somebody living with the condition can't, because we sort of have a sneaky way in to their private email addresses. We also facilitate support grants and voice banking funding requests as well. People will come to us for those. It feels like that's not everything we do.
My name is Jabobi Shafiq, and I am a helpline care navigator for PSPA. We took a short break from producing podcasts to get feedback about the type of topics we would want to cover. And resoundingly, people fed back to us that they wanted the voices of people living with PSP and CBD to be better heard in this podcast. So that's why now we've broadened out the podcast. Instead of just appealing to carers, we would now like to cover topics that will be of interest to everyone also affected by PSP and CBD. In the first episode of a Reshaped podcast, we are talking to Gilda. So Gilda is living with a diagnosis of CBD, and today Gilda is going to share with us details of her symptoms, diagnosis, and how CBD has impacted her daily living, and to see if she has any new hobbies to help keep her active. Welcome, Gilda.
Welcome. Thank you very much. I'm thrilled to be doing this podcast today.
No, I'm glad to have you here today. So just a couple of questions that I have for you today, just to see your experience of CBD and how it has affected your life. So to just start delving into your diagnosis journey, could you just tell us a little bit about the symptoms you were experiencing before your diagnosis?
Before my diagnosis, I was a touch typist, and I found with my right arm, I couldn't touch type anymore. That was the first giveaway for me personally, but also stairs were a bone of contention as well, and my balance was affected. So about 3 years ago, I noticed the symptoms, and I went to visit my GP. Nothing else besides that, though. Touch typing and balance and a bit of anxiousness as well.
Okay, and then how long would you say it took you to reach out to your GP after experiencing these symptoms?
I first experienced the symptoms in 2020 and reached out to my GP in 2022.
Okay, and do you remember what your GP's initial thoughts were about your symptoms?
He wasn't sure about my symptoms, and he suggested that I go privately because the NHS waiting list was so long. So I went privately to get the diagnosis.
So when you did receive a diagnosis of CBD, how did you first feel? I mean, did you ever hear of CBD before? No, did your consultant give you any information?
No, not at all. And Dr. Sanjeet Scotton was really good, and she explained it, but I was devastated, absolutely devastated by the prognosis.
Annalisa Kazari. I'm the PSPA's research coordinator. I will be hosting the second episode in series two of our podcast, now reframed to appeal to everyone affected by PSP and CBD. When reviewing the podcast, we asked some of our supporters what topics you would like to be discussed in different episodes. One of the topics you said you would like to be discussed was diagnosis of PSP and CBD. So today, in order to delve into this subject matter, I'm joined by Dr. Boyd Ghosh. Boyd is a consultant neurologist in Southampton and also a PSPA trustee. Welcome, Boyd, and would you like to say something about yourself?
Hello, Annalisa. So so thank you for inviting me on this podcast. I'm a consultant neurologist, as you said, in Southampton, and together with some colleagues, Luke Massey and Jay Donnelly and others, I run a regional clinic for people with progressive supranuclear palsy, corticobasal degeneration, and a few other conditions such as multiple system atrophy and ataxia.
What is the diagnosis process in PSP, and if there is a difference with the CBD?
I suppose the process starts by seeing them walk into the room, talking to them, no matter whether the carer thinks that they should be able to talk to me or give me a clear history or not, because it's about the process of how they can talk to me and interact with me. Carers are a really important part of the diagnostic process. So they're there not only to support the person who's being diagnosed, but also to provide extra information and background information about how they were and how they are now. So I'll typically spend a bit of time taking a history, searching for the first time that something happened. So they fell 2 years ago, or they started having difficulty with their sight 3 years ago, something like that. And then try and build up a picture of how things have progressed going forward until they get to this point. By the time the history finishes, I'll have a fairly good idea of what I think. And that's, I guess, broken down into clearly PSP, clearly not PSP, or still not quite sure. And then I'll examine them. And I usually examine for the cardinal signs of PSP first. So I'll think about their eye movements. I'll think about how steady they are, which I've already probably assessed that come in through the door. And then I'll do a whole neuro exam just to make sure there's nothing else that I've missed. And often that's the bit that perhaps someone else might not do, but which has thrown up some difficulties where I can be less sure about the diagnosis after the examination because it's something that I wouldn't expect to be there. With CBD, it's quite different. They don't have eye signs, and they don't tend to fall over quite as much as people with PSP. But what they do have is they have often a hand, but it could be a leg, which doesn't move as they expect it to. It doesn't obey commands. It seems to do things on its own. And so the examination is a bit more important there. So if they have apraxia, by which I mean that they can move their hand and they can feel their hand, but they can't get it to do useful tasks like brush their teeth with a toothbrush or comb their hair, then that suggests that it's something called apraxia, which is something that a function that resides in the very edges of the brain called the cortex. And that's quite a characteristic feature of corticobasal degeneration. People can also have visual problems or language problems, which are subtle, but which are nonetheless present.
Hello and welcome to the PSPA podcast. I'm Megan Hodgson, PSPA's research coordinator, and I'm hosting this episode of the podcast because of its focus on research. We know research is a topic our supporters are keen to learn more about, how it's helping us diagnose people earlier, how it's looking to find new treatments for the symptoms and treatments to slow progression. To shine a light on the PSP and CBD research landscape, today I'll be talking to Dr. Ed Jabari from UCL in London. Welcome, Ed. Could you just introduce yourself and your current role at Queen Square in London for us?
Hey, hi, Megan. Thanks very much for having me. So I'm Ed Jabari. I'm currently working as a neurology trainee at the National Hospital for Neurology and Neurosurgery, and I'm also a clinical researcher at the UCL Queen Square Institute of Neurology. And my research focuses on PSP and other Parkinsonian disorders.
You've been working with PSPA for a few years now. Could you give us a bit of an overview of the research you've been involved with over the years?
Yeah, so I guess in summary, what I'm trying to say in terms of the impact is the first aspect in terms of widening our understanding of how the disease can present will go towards improving early diagnosis of the condition and just generally raising awareness of the different ways that the condition can present to non-specialists, because obviously we have to remember that the way PSP patients initially present is not to a movement disorder specialist in a tertiary center. It's usually to their GP, to falls clinics, to memory clinics, etc. It's raising awareness in those settings that's really important. And then the other aspect in terms of the genetic studies, the real impact for patients is opening up the potential for new treatment targets, which is something that we desperately need in the world of PSP, because we know that unfortunately we don't at the moment have any effective medications that can stop or slow down the disease in its tracks.
Well, thank you for listening to our montage of podcasts from the last couple of years. I hope you enjoyed it. If there were subjects you're particularly interested in during that montage, you can go back and listen to previous episodes on subjects such as home adaptations, caring for a parent, or getting support. Series 3 of our podcast will be coming out in 2025. If there are topics we haven't yet covered and you'd like to hear more about, then please do get in touch and you can make suggestions about areas you would like us to do podcasts on in the coming year. Thank you very much.